have your Bible tonight. We will not be very long tonight, more than likely. And I'm glad all y'all showed up, but just to be honest, I really just wanted to preach to the teenagers here tonight. So, like I said, I'm glad you're here, but and I hope you get something out of it, but this is really for the teenagers tonight. Luke chapter number 15, we'll start reading in verse number 11. It says, "And he said, a certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me. And he divided unto them his living. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want. And he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. And he would fain have filled his belly with the husks that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. And when he came to himself, he said, How many hired servants of my father's have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against thee and against heaven, and before I have sinned against heaven and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. And he arose and came to his father, but when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. But the father said to his servants, Bring forth the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet. And bring hither the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry. Now his elder son was in the field, and as he came and drew nigh to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said unto him, Thy brother is come, and thy father hath killed the fatted calf, because he hath received him safe and sound. And he was angry and would not go in. Therefore came his father out and entreated him. And he answering said to his father, Lo, these many years do I serve thee, neither transgressed I at any time thy commandment, and yet thou never gavest me a kid, that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this thy son was come, which hath devoured thy living with harlots, thou hast killed for him the fatted calf. And he said unto him, Son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. It was meet that we should make merry and be glad, for this thy brother was dead, and is alive again, and was lost, and is found. Now, obviously, this is a very familiar text to most of us if we've grown up in church or been in church for any amount of time. And obviously, it's the main picture, the main representation, the main illustration that Jesus is portraying in this parable is the fact that there's a good father who loves his son, and being the father in this representing God the Father, and us or mankind representing the son that goes into the far country and comes back. And it shows the forgiveness that God the Father has for us, and how that he takes us back, and when we're repentant, that he'll forgive us, and then all is okay again. And I've heard people preach simply about the father's love and forgiveness from this text. And I've also heard people preach about the elder brother who stayed with the father in this text, in the sense of where when he would not accept his brother when he came back, how that many times that's the problem that we have in our own lives, how that we cannot, when Jesus can forgive someone and accept them, we have trouble forgiving someone and accepting them back in. And then you can also look in the fact of where the brother, he wasn't saved. The elder brother, you could say that he really wasn't saved. He was around the father. He was around the things of the father, but yet he wouldn't actually go into the house that the father was in. And you can make all those parallels from this text, and you would be right in doing so. But tonight, what I want to preach about, what the prodigal son didn't know about the far country. And again, I'm not preaching to you elder folks. I'm preaching to the teenagers tonight. So y'all listen and hear me well. And there's four quick things, and I'm going to be done, that I want to say about what he didn't know about that far country. Number one, he didn't know about the bondage that was in that far country. You say, what bondage was he under? You see, that younger son, he had no idea what he was getting into before he stepped foot away from his father into that far country. He had no idea what was waiting for him in that far country. You see, this son, he was loved all of his life by his father. You see, this son, he had wealth. He had things, he had means in this world. How do you know that, preacher? Because it says his father gave them inheritance, number one, and then he had hired servants. You see, in those days, if you had an inheritance to get, you were somebody. And if you had servants, you were somebody. Just like today, if you had an inheritance that was coming your way and you had servants, you would be somebody. So this son, he had a very sheltered life and a comfortable life and a safe environment. You see, he didn't know the things of the world living there with his father on their farm, their ranch, whatever it was that they lived and where they grew animals and raised crops and things like that. He knew nothing of the outside world living with his father and brother there. But you see, more than likely when he asked his father for his inheritance, it probably broke his father's heart. We don't know, it doesn't say, but more than likely it did, just because it would break any of our parents' heart. Because what he was asking his father for right there, what he was saying to him is simply, Father, you're dead to me. Because he would not get his inheritance, basically, until he was dead. So he's saying that he valued his inheritance more than he valued his father's life. And that's I'll leave that right there. I'm not going to go on with that. But so when he goes into this far country, you see, his father probably warned him. He probably said, now, son, are you really sure you want to do this? He willingly gave him the inheritance he asked for, but he probably warned him and said, now, son, this is what's going to happen. This is what's waiting for you over there. This is what happens on the other side of the fence, so to speak. But yet he still took his inheritance and he went into a far country. And you say, what did he do in that far country? When you read the text, it says he wasted everything that he had with riotous living. Now, what does riotous living mean? It simply means that he spent it on alcohol, he spent it on booze, he spent it on drugs, he spent it on women, he spent it on every possible thing he could do to rebel against his father and to rebel against God. You see, well, did he do it all at once? No, probably not. You see, when he went to that far country, he had never experienced that before. And so when he stepped out, he just wanted to dip his toe in it at first. Just those first couple of days, he was probably wandering around and seeing what the far country had to offer, how the people of that country, how they lived their lives, what type of entertainment could he go and find. And the first day, he may have took a little bit of his inheritance and he may have went and bought some alcohol to drink. Or he may have went down to the club and went clubbing one night. But little by little, he spent more and more of his inheritance. And little by little, he got deeper and deeper into that far country. And eventually, till he woke up one day and he looked around and he had nothing. He had nothing that was left that his father had given him. And he was lost by himself in this far country with no friends, with no money, and with no family. You see, the bondage of that far country had gotten to this younger son that he didn't know about. He had no idea of that bondage that was coming to him. You see, that bondage, what it did, that bondage was like a snake to him. Any of y'all who, I'm sure we all know what a python is. A python, it's a constricting snake. And you see, that far country was like a snake to that younger son. At first, that first day when he walked into it, it was like, oh, this is so cool. It was all new to him. It was nice. It was pretty and shiny like a new car or a new house or a new job or a new building or a new place that you go and visit. But then he started to hang around that area. He started to hang around that snake, if you will. At first that snake, oh, look how pretty that snake is. And then he started to pet that snake. And, oh, look, it's so calm. It's just laying there letting me pet it. And then before he knew it, he got in real deep in that far country. And that snake, so to speak, started to wrap itself around his arm or wrap itself around his body. And he said, oh, look at that cute snake. It's playing with me now. But then before he realized it, that snake was wrapped all the way around him and it started to constrict him. And you see what a constricting snake does, every time it feels movement from its prey, it tightens its grip. So in other words, that younger son, he got so far into that far country that eventually he couldn't find his way back out. He got so far in, he couldn't see the way he came from, and all around him it was the far country. And so it didn't matter if he took a step forward, a step back, to his right, or to his left. Every time he took a step, that snake constricted on him more. And eventually it squeezed not the physical life out of him, but it squeezed every ounce of any hope that he had out of him. That's what that far country will do to you. That's what that snake will do to you. And you say, well, I'm just still a teenager. I haven't left home yet. That's good, and you should appreciate that. You should appreciate the fact if you have parents who raised you in a good home, like I was raised in. Or many of you, I know that you are being raised in a good home because you're here on a Sunday night in church when you could be anywhere else. You should be thankful and appreciative of that. But one day you will no longer be living with your parents. Whether you go to college or whether you just go and get a job or whether you go get married, one day you will no longer live with them. And one day you will step foot outside of these four walls and you will step out into that far country that is the world. And you will have a choice what you do in that far country. We have to live in this world, but you don't have to take part in it. And you have a choice of what you're going to do. If you step foot and go the wrong way in that far country, I promise you it will devour you and destroy you. I can give you countless examples of people in my own family. Let me tell you two of them real quick, and y'all listen to me well. And yeah, they're kind of extreme, but they happen. It's what happens when you live in sin. Number one, I had a relative probably 10 years ago that she shot herself and killed herself. Her whole life, she had been a drunk. Not an alcoholic, a drunk. That's what people are that have an issue with drinking. They're drunks. She was a drunk. She was a super sweet and nice person when she wasn't drunk. But she had that vice. That alcohol was that snake that wrapped itself around her. And every single day that she drank some booze from that bottle, that snake tightened its grip around her. You see, I would know when she was on a binge one day because she lived next door to my grandma, who I got to spend a lot of time with. And you could look out her side window and you could see her sister's house down there. And if her car hadn't moved in 2 or 3 days, you know that she was drunk. And now when she was drunk, she was the meanest person you would have ever met, you could have ever seen. She was a mean person when she was drunk. That's what alcohol does to you. It makes you not who you are. And you see, she could not get outside that grip of that alcohol. And one day, about 10 years ago, me and my family are sitting in the restaurant one day, and my mom's phone rings, and she answers it and says hello, and then she about drops it, and she about hits the floor. And she said our family member's name, she just said, so-and-so shot herself. Just like that. You see, that's what sin does to you. That's what that far country does to you. I don't know when that my great aunt went into that far country, when she first took that first step into that far country, but she got so far into it that it eventually took her life. And I'm not saying that it will take your life or that you will kill yourself one day, but it has the potential to do that to you. It has that potential. And the second person in my family is someone who, he was not raised like that. He was raised in a good Christian home. His father is a pastor. His mother is a godly woman. But you see, at some point, he got mixed up in sin. He got mixed up in drugs and alcohol. And he got to sleeping around with other women and cheating on his wife and running around on her and not being home. And you see, one day he was over on a high. He was high and drunk out of his mind. And he shot somebody. Otherwise, he would have never done that in his right mind. But he stepped out into that far country. He stepped out into that bondage. He stepped out to where that snake could wrap himself around him. And he shot somebody. He took another person's life because of what he did, because of the choices that he made. Now again, I'm telling you, these are extreme examples, but they're real examples. You see, that's what Hollywood is not going to tell you. When you watch TV and you see a Budweiser commercial or you see a wine commercial or any other kind of thing or somebody's advertising marijuana because they're pushing that to legalize it, or you see someone advertising, you know, I don't know, outside of marriage, sexual relationships, all those things. Hollywood and society, when you watch movies and stuff, they tell you that those things are real and that they're fine. But what they don't show you is the next day. They show you the people that are partying and having fun. And they show you the people, if you go to spring break at the beach, they show you all the teenagers and college kids having a good old time. But they don't show you the next day when they wake up passed out drunk with a killer headache. They don't show you the time when they wake up the next morning and they can't remember who they slept with. Or if they contracted some sort of disease. Or the fact they don't know who the baby's daddy is. All of these things are things Hollywood do not show you. But they are real bondages that are in the far country. And if you're not careful, they will wrap themselves around you and you will be bound and cannot get out of them. So number one, they didn't tell them about the bondage of the far country. Number two, They didn't tell them about the buzzards in the far country. Say, where do you see a buzzard at in here? We'll get to that. So we know that the son, he is bound in this far country and he has nothing left. But it says also, it says in the text that a famine came and he was in want, he was hungry, he needed food. But you know what the other people that were affected in that far country as well was everybody else. Everybody in that far country was affected by it, not just him. And you, what that means is that that far country, it does not show favoritism. That far country did not care that he came from a rich family. It did not care that he came from a godly family. It did not care that he came from a good family or a church-based family. It didn't care if someone in that far country was a drunk. It didn't care if somebody in that far country was a heart. It didn't care what type of, it didn't care what kind of occupation that they had, what age they were, what nationality they were, what health condition that they had. It cared nothing about that. It showed no favoritism to the people of that far country. It desires to bind every single one of us in that far country. But what happens is when there's a famine, things start to die. And what happens when things start to die? Buzzards start showing up. And buzzards, have you noticed, they only come by when there's dead things around. You might want to, if the only time somebody comes by is when something's dead or dying or stinks, you might just want to stay away from it. I'm just going to say that. But when he's in this far country, and this famine is going on, so you have to remember the fact this son, he is a Jewish person. And so he is so low in such a destitute state, he's in such a bound state, that he has to go and bind himself to a citizen of this country who is the buzzard, who is taking advantage of him. He sinks so low that he has to go and feed something that is unclean according to the Jewish religion, according to his faith. And so he has to literally go down into that pig pen to feed those things that are unclean. That's how low he had sunk. That's how bound that far country had him. It wasn't just bad enough that it took his money. It wasn't just bad enough that it took his family. It wasn't just bad enough that he took his food. It took his religion from him. The things that he was supposed to keep sacred, the laws that he was supposed to keep, it took that from him as well. In other words, that far country will take church out of you as well. And when it says that he would, in verse number 16, it says, and he would fain have filled his belly. That word fain, it means it would have pleased him, or he would have been glad to eat the things that he was feeding the pigs. Doesn't mean that he actually did, but it means he would have gladly ate that. So this son who was once living with his wonderful, loving father, his wealthy father who had everything that that his son could ever want, he now was in a pig pen in a far country, desiring and saying that he would have been pleased to eat what he's feeding these unclean animals. That's how far that sin had got him. That's how deep in that far country that he was. But let me also say about buzzards. Buzzards, they come around when things are dead, and they come around when things are bad. But you know, they do come around too, though, when things are going really well. The way to distinguish a buzzard from someone who's genuine is someone who's genuine, they'll be there when things are good and when things are bad. Pay attention to rich athletes or actors or actresses, musicians on TV. Whenever you see a video of them on the news or something and there's 50 people around them, it's because everybody wants something from them because they've got money. But hey, have you ever watched a documentary on someone who once was worth millions of dollars and then they lost it all? And wouldn't you know it, they have no more friends now. All those people who they thought were their friends, they're no longer around. That's because they're not really friends. See, when you go into that far country, you don't really have any friends. People only want you for what you can give them. People will only want you for what you can give them. They will not want you for you. They will want you for what they can take from you. That's why they're buzzards. And hey, you teenagers, hear me when I say this, is that, hey, you girls, whenever you go on a date, if the boy, if he won't open the door for you, he's a buzzard. He's a buzzard. When he comes to pick you up, if he won't go inside and meet your parents, he's a buzzard. I'm serious, he's a buzzard. You tell him to hit the road and don't go out with him. Hey, And I'm going to be appropriate because I know there's young kids in here. But hey, you older teenage girls, if he tries to get you in his back seat, he's a buzzard. You hear me? He's a buzzard. Y'all are worth more than that. Your value is more than that, more than what you can give in that moment. He's a buzzard if he tries to do that to you. He's a buzzard if he tries to come over to your house when your parents aren't there. He's a buzzard if he tries to do that. Hey, you boys, if a girl, if she tries to dress in something real scandalous and real enticing to try to get you to do something you don't want to do and you wouldn't otherwise do, she's a buzzard. Some of y'all are uncomfortable, I can tell, but I really don't care. Because the reason that why so many of our teenagers are going to hell and the reason that so many of our teenagers are so messed up in the head is because we don't say these things to them. Because they hear so much worse junk on the news and on TV and at school. You think that I'm being vulgar. You should hear what their friends at school, or not their friends, but the people who they're having class with are saying. The things that they're exposing to them. I'm just telling the truth because I care about them. That's why I'm telling y'all this. Because I love y'all and I care about what y'all are doing. If what they want from you doesn't line up with what your parents want from you, or your pastor wants from you, or this church wants from you, or God's word wants from you, they're buzzards. And tell them to hit the road. And if you're too afraid to, come get me and I'll tell them to hit the road for you. I'm serious. I got no problem doing it. I've done it before. I'll do it again. They're buzzards. The far country will bound you, and there's buzzards in that far country. Number three, what else didn't he know about the far country? He didn't know about the brokenness that was in the far country. The brokenness that was in the far country. So eventually this younger son, he comes to his senses. He has to get in the pig pen to finally realize what he's done and that he was wrong. But thankfully, he finally realizes that he's in the wrong and he's to go back home. And so we know the story from the text that when he comes to himself, he rehearses what he's going to say to his dad. He's about how he's going to apologize, ask him to forgive him, and just don't make me your son. I'm no longer worthy to be your son. Just let me be a hired servant. Because you see, what made him realize that is he's starving. And his father's servants have food to eat. He said, how's he know that? He was close enough to be able to still look back at home and see what was going on. You see, he wasn't way out there in left field. He was in the far country and he was in the wrong. But he was close enough where he could still look back where he could still see that light that was on at home burning. And so it made him start to think and start to ponder and wonder in it. It made him start to question why he had ever done that in the first place. And so we know that he goes and he starts making his way back home. And that when it says his father sees him far off, and his father runs to him and embraces him. And we know that he tells him to put the ring on his hand and the shoes and the robe and kill the fatted calf and all that because he's wanting to throw a party because his son has came home. You see, the son in the story, his father was, what he was overjoyed to see his son. He was ecstatic to see him. But his brother was not so much. You see, his brother was the one who had never left home. His brother was the one who was faithful to his father. His brother was the one who kept working for his father and kept being faithful and the good son and the righteous son and the son who was worthy to be called son. At least that's what the younger son probably would think. And we know that the older father, he receives him back into his arms and he says, you know, the son starts to ask for his forgiveness. And it's like the father, he didn't even hear what the son was saying. He didn't even acknowledge it. He just said, go and kill the fatted calf. Let's have a big party. My son's came home. And so the older son, when he comes back by from the field and he hears the music and the dancing and we know that he asks, what's going on? What's with the party? And when he learns that his younger brother has come back home, what should have been a joyous occasion for him as well, just like his father, he was not joy. There was no joy with him. He was broken. He was angry is what it was. He was angry at his father because he thought his father had done him wrong by throwing the party for his son who had spent his inheritance. And he was angry at his son, or at his own brother, because he didn't stay there and work with them and help him and labor with him for their father. You see, what that caused when he went into that far country, it caused him bondage, and it caused him, and there was buzzards there, but it caused brokenness in his own family and in his own life. You see, there were consequences to his sin. You see, even though that his father forgave him because he did, and even though your parents will forgive you because they will, and even though God the Father and Jesus will forgive you and they will, but just because people forgive you does not wipe away and erase everything that's done in the past. Everything that you've done in that far country, there are consequences to what you do in that far country. There will be brokenness to some degree when you come back, if you come back. You see, if you come back, there will be a scar there somewhere. There will be a scar on you, and there will be a scar on everybody else who's involved. You see, when you think about a scar is covering a wound, right? So there was once a wound there, and then it scars over, it scabs over for it to heal. But it never fully heals. If you have a scar, it stays there. See, I have a scar on the top of my head from a surgery I had when I was a baby. Now, I'm perfectly fine, thankfully, but that scar is always there. It doesn't take, even though I'm fine and healthy, it doesn't take away the fact that I had that surgery. So that scar is a constant reminder. But if you don't come back from that far country, there will always be an open wound. You see, the only time that a scab and a scar occurs is when there's a partial healing. If you don't come back and there's no healing, there will forever be an open wound in you and in your family or whoever it is that you walk out on to go to that far country. There will always be that brokenness there. And now when we read the text, it gives no indication that the two brothers ever reconciled what had happened between the two of them. Now, I would like to think that eventually that they worked it out and they were okay with each other. But it doesn't say that they were. If they worked it out, there was always a scar between those brothers, though. Even if that older brother would have forgiven him, there was always going to be that friction at some point that would come up where if he would get agitated as a younger brother and say, well, you know, well, remember when you went to the, if he would get mad, they'd get in an argument. He could always throw back on, well, if you hadn't went to the far country, because that's what we do. That's why we're flesh. We're humans. Jesus forgives us, but we don't forget. It's the truth. We don't. We don't forget. We're like a herd of elephants, because they say elephants never forget. That's what we are. And that's why we have so many issues in our church as well, because we say, well, Jesus will forgive them, and we know that he does, but we won't forgive them. And that's why we can't have spirit sometimes, because we can't forgive our neighbor when we're commanded to forgive our neighbor. There will be a scar there. There will be brokenness there. Forever be brokenness there if you go into that far country. Forever. Let me say that again. Forever. It's not like a pain you have in your body that the next day or the next week or the next month or maybe the next year it goes away and you get better. It will be forever. For the rest of your life, that brokenness will be there. You will feel guilty and they will feel guilty. Even after that person is dead and gone, that brokenness will, if you're still alive, that brokenness will still be there. Because you will still have your memory and recollection of when you went to the far country and you caused that brokenness in your family or in your life. Y'all hear me. I'm not trying to be harsh on you. I'm telling you this because I love you. Hear what I'm saying. There will be a scar there. Fourthly, and I'm done. So there was bondage, there was buzzards, there was brokenness, and lastly, there was a branding. A branding. Now, since some of you young people may not have animals or have been around animals and may not know, what a branding is it, say you, it, a rancher who has a bunch of cattle, he'll brand them. It'll have like a number or a mark, some way to identify that cow belongs to him. So if it gets out and somebody finds it, they can identify the farmer that it goes back to. But this branding, it's permanent. This branding, it's forever on that cow. See, what they do is they'll take a mold, whatever the image, the stencil, the design logo, whatever, and it'll be on a piece of hot rod iron. and it like red cherry hot, like it's burnt blazing orange hot, like it'll kill all the nerves, all the skin, all the hide, everything that it touches. And they stick it in the fire and heat it up, and then they stick it and they brand that animal. It's very painful for a couple moments, but eventually that pain goes away. But the thing that doesn't ever go away off of that animal is that marking, that branding. That branding is always on that animal. So no matter who comes by, they can look at that animal, they can say, well, yeah, that belongs to so-and-so. He lives down the road. And that's what happened to this younger son. He was branded. Now, no, he physically did not have a mark on his body. He may have had some kind of accident, and there was some kind of physical scar that resulted from being in the far country, and he forever lived with it. But let's just say that he didn't. But psychologically and emotionally and spiritually, he was scarred for the rest of, or he was branded, scarred, whatever you want to call it, for the rest of his life. You see, the father forgave him when he came home. And like I said, I hope that the two brothers reconciled, and assuming that every single person in his life forgave him, and he was back to like nothing had ever happened with them, he still had a brand on him. You see, he still had that brand on him that he had went into that far country. Because what would happen, like I said already, we as humans don't forget. See, every time he would walk down the street, maybe the next week, the next month, the next year, maybe even a decade later, walking down to go to the market to buy something or just going out with friends or whatever it was, he would always have that brand on him. They would always whisper and say, hey, that's so-and-so's son. He went over to he got his inheritance from his dad, and he went to the far country, and he slept around, and he got drunk, and he did all these awful things. Whether you like it or not, there will always be a brand on you. Forever. For the rest of your life, there'll be a brand on you. And you know what's really bad about that brand is that brand, that is your testimony. You see, if it was just a physical brand, you can get over that. If it was something on your arm, you could wear a long sleeve and cover it up where nobody would see it. But everyone who's involved in your life will always know that you were branded that certain way. And even if they mean it with no ill, with no malice, just a simple observation, it will still be a brand that's on your life forever. No matter if it's a superficial skin deep brand, or if it's a deep brand that kills all the nerves and the hide and the skin and the flesh like they do when they brand an animal. Forever that brand will be on you. Let me give you an example. Some of y'all have probably heard of this guy. He's a great preacher. His name's Barry Spears. And he's got a tremendous testimony. Every single one of you tonight should go home and look him up on the internet and hear him preach and hear his testimony. It's phenomenal. But Barry Spears, he lives near Columbia, South Carolina, and he's about Gunn's age, I think. And when he was a teenager or early 20s, somewhere in there, he got involved. He started to wade out into that far country. And what he did by just dipping his toe in there, he went and bought some alcohol, and I think he bought some cigarettes or some drugs or something like that. And he got in his car, and he pulled around behind a building somewhere, and he said that's where he took his first drink of alcohol and took his first dope or something like that, some type of drug. And for the next years, I'm talking like over a decade, maybe even almost 15 to 20 years, it progressed to where he went from, and he was raised in a good, godly Christian home. And he went from just taking a couple sips of alcohol and some cigarettes and stuff to where it progressed and kept going to where he started drinking more and more and more. He did more drugs and more drugs. I've seen his arms. He's got tattoos all over his arms. He's got needle tracks all up his arms and where he poked himself with so many needles to get so many drugs, to get high so many times. Eventually, he joined the Hell's Angels motorcycle gang. See, this was a godly young man who was raised in a Christian home with Christian parents, and he went from drinking one thing of alcohol and smoking a cigarette to join the Hell's Angels motorcycle gang. I'm not going to explain who that is. I'm sure most of y'all know who the Hell's Angels are. But for you kids, they're a very mean and aggressive and violent motorcycle gang. They get into lots of bar fights and do all the things that you shouldn't do, all the things that you would do in the far country. And he said that one day he said that he would come home from riding out wherever he was with the motorcycle gang. He'd come home and he'd crash. He was doped out of his mind and strung out of his mind and drunk out of his mind, all these things. And he couldn't remember where he'd been the night before, who he had possibly beat up at the bar the night before, or maybe what woman he had slept with the night before. And he comes home and his wife is there with his kids. And his wife was loving and supportive of him the whole time. She never once left him. The whole time. You see, that caused brokenness between the two of them. You see, he started out bound by those things. And then those buzzards came around, being the Hell's Angels motorcycle gang, were those buzzards that came by and they picked him off. And then he caused brokenness in his own family by doing all those things, by those things to his wife and never being home for his children. And eventually he got so low that he said that he was in a bar somewhere one night. And I don't remember he said he was drunk at that point, and that the Holy Ghost started speaking to him and telling him that what he was doing is wrong. He knew it needed to go back home. I'm paraphrasing all this, obviously, but he needed to go back home and get right. And so long story short, he goes back home and he gets himself clean, and somehow he gets out of the Hell's Angels motorcycle gang. But what I'm saying is, my point is that those needle tracks that are in his arms, those tattoos that are all over his arms, his liver that's probably about half shot by now, all those things are a brand that's forever on him. And now, all those things that happened to him, they are a tremendous testimony for the grace of God and the things that God can do with the man. He's a great, like I said, he's a tremendous preacher, a tremendous pastor. He's a wonderful man. But I would just guess, I've never asked him, but I would guess, if you could go back and if you could do it all over again, which way would you choose? I don't think for one second he would ever say, I would do it all over again. But you see, that one choice that he made, stepping out into that far country, took him all the way full circle to where he was doing all those things, to where he doesn't wear long or short sleeves anywhere in public because he doesn't want people to see his tattoos and the needle tracks in his arms. Now, if you ask him, he'll show them to you, but he doesn't want to show them off for various reasons. What I'm saying is, and I'm not saying any of y'all or myself are going to have that extreme of a case or that serious of a case going into the far country. But what I'm saying is that if you take one step into that far country, you have no idea what's going to happen next. You see, don't take that first step is what I'm saying. You see, if you take that first step, it's like playing with that pet sin, that pet snake. You take that first step, and every single step that you take this way, that way gets farther away. And every time you take a step this way, it gets that much easier to take another step this way, and another step this way, and another step this way, and another, and another, and another. Before you know it, you look back this way, and it's the good country, the country where you should be, is way back there. And you're so far away from it, and you make up an excuse. Oh, it's too far, or I'm too tired, or you come up with anything in the world to keep going forward. That's my message tonight. I'm done. But y'all hear me. You teenagers, y'all, the ones who are in high school, a couple of y'all are in college or about to go to college, you hear me. I'm not just some old man trying to be up here like just trying to tell you how it is and what to do and what not to do, but I kind of am. Because I'm not that much older than y'all. You see, I have grown up in the same time period that y'all have. I have experienced many of the things that y'all have or y'all will. I have been offered alcohol before, plenty of times in college. I have been offered drugs plenty of times in college. I have been offered sex many of times in college. I've been all these things. thankfully, and the only reason I said no to all those things was by the grace of God. Let me say that, not by anything that I could ever do. But I'm telling you that these things are real. And I don't care how good of a family you've got and how good of friends you have got. It doesn't matter how, and I know some of y'all are homeschooled, and that's fine, and that's wonderful, and that's great. But eventually, you will no longer be homeschooled and living with mom and dad. I don't care if you don't go away to college. If you just live next door to them, you eventually will one day go to the job somewhere. And someone at your job will offer you something. So, girls, some guy will try to hit on you. Or guys, some woman will try to act all flirtatious with you. Or someone will ask you if you want to go, if you want to go have a beer sometime. It happened to me. We were at Beef O'Brady's the other night. Me and Carissa were. And a coworker of mine, he comes in and he was sitting at an adjacent booth. And he got to walk out. And he's like, oh, hey, Justin, how's it going, man? And we talked just for a second about how much we like to eat there. And he's like, oh, let's get a beer sometime there. You see, just in simple passing like that, someone will offer you alcohol. And he meant no ill intent by it. He's a great guy, but he drinks alcohol and he shouldn't do that. What I'm saying is, even something as simple as that, there was no malice in his offer there. But just a simple just invitation like that sometimes is what comes and gets you. It's not always the person who's beating you over the head saying, here, come drink with me, come drink with me. It's the person who just, here, man, just take this. Or the person who's got some weed and just says, here, just take this and, you know, take it home, smoke it whenever you want to. It doesn't have to be right then in that moment. These things are real. The consequences of the far country are real. But the good news is that you don't have to go to the far country. That's what I'm doing.
And we hear that message. I wonder if you've been thinking what I've been thinking. I wish a lot of teenagers could hear that. You might be thinking, I wish my grandson, my granddaughter, my son, my daughter. How many thousand children should hear that? You may be thinking, I wish I'd have heard that when I was young. Thank God, brother. We needed that. I'm going to do my utmost to get that tape played on the radio station. I'm sure they will. It's one of a kind, brother. I appreciate you. Appreciate that kind of preaching. We've been blessed today, Brother Gunn, this morning. Brother Justin, night. Singing morning and night was great. God's good. Let's worship together. And let's pray much. We realize how sad it is out there And we heard this gospel message. We adhere to it. We thank God for it. So many out there, if they heard it, they would turn a deaf ear to it. Already out there in that far country with no intent. They wasn't raised like a lot of people that, example we've heard for the most part, they were in church when they were young. Everybody's not like that. They're already so far gone that when they hear something, they're going with it. We're blessed. We've heard, and we know. Let's pray much. All minds and hearts clear. Wednesday night's coming up. I love it. And appreciate the goodness of God allowing us again to worship. And let me say this, Heather. I'm going to do a one call Friday or Saturday to let everybody know in their church. But we had a great crowd this morning, a big crowd, and I like that. It was big enough where it caused some of us maybe to sit a little bit too close. So next Sunday, I hope that I'm going to offer this to you, expecting a big crowd, and that's good. But I want volunteers, some of you that will ahead of time say, we're going to sit in the choir. And so we're going to sit in the balcony ahead of time. So when visitors come in at the last minute, whatever, they're not having to sit maybe closer than they'd like to set. So we'll ask that next week. Some volunteers, and don't wait until we get crowded. Just volunteer ahead of time. And we had to do that in the old church. I was telling someone a while ago, in the old sanctuary, we had to sit in the choir and had to have two services, and then we had to have an overflow room in the second service. And those were good problems to have. We didn't have a pandemic in those days, thank God. But today, we have to keep doing the laws of the land. And by the way, you heard about the Supreme Court turning down First Amendment rights. That's what it amounts to. So the First Amendment rights, you've lost if you don't have them. They're great then. And I'm not going to say over the air, I might give somebody some ideas, I will too. But the federal judge overruled our governor and said, you know, you can't limit the crowds to 10 or even 100. Keep your social distances. Thank God that happened before Supreme Court. We're blessed. Everyone stand.